You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Tuesday edition, and we are broadcasting from Dallas. I've lived in Dallas, Texas since 1983, and the reason why that's important, a legend in not only Dallas and Texas died today of leukemia. I'm talking of Ross Perot. I remember distinctly I was working for General Dynamics at the Fort Worth division, and me and another gentleman represented our company at a dinner and a meet and greet type situation, and did at least shake his hand. So I did see him face to face, but it was 2 seconds, 3 seconds. Shake your hand, introduce yourself, and move on, because there were a lot of people at that function. But I always admired him more for his business achievements and his generosity in terms of supporting various charitable organizations. But I was not a fan of his in terms of when he ran for president. Initially, like many people in Dallas and in Texas, and I think across the country, when Ross Perot now announced, I would have voted for him. I was not happy with George Bush. I'm very much a classical liberal, think of it as a libertarian or conservative, definitely was a fiscal conservative, believed in balanced budgets, and the need for paying off the national debt. So initially, I really supported Ross Perot. Now, I wasn't an activist by far. I knew some people that were active in his campaign, but I was busy building my own business at the time, so politics I really didn't pay that much attention to. But what really disappointed me, and I think many people that initially supported Ross Perot, what you need to understand, at one time in early June, he was the leader, and I think he was going to win. And the polls said he was ahead of both Bush and Clinton. I couldn't vote for Clinton. I checked him out and said, no way. And remember, Bush broke his promise. No new taxes. Read my lips, no new taxes. And I really think that did George Bush in. Do I believe that Ross Perot was the reason the Republicans lost to Bill Clinton? No, I don't. Because what you need to understand why Ross Perot was very much a fiscal conservative on social issues, he wasn't. He was more or less a liberal Democrat, or moderate is probably the best way to say, if you look at both the financial issues, which I think he was right on the button on, but I really disagreed with him on many of the social issues. I'm very much pro-life. He was very much pro-choice. And I will never vote for anyone that's pro-choice. Not that the pro-choice people care, because there are a lot of pro-choice people that won't vote for any candidate that's pro-life. That is an issue that really has divided the American people. And the percentages change, but in my mind, it's more or less a 50-50 proposition. Now, I'm not going to get into that, but I really did admire his business career and what he did, starting really. See, I work for a big corporation, too. When I got out of the Air Force, I was in the Air Force for 5 years. He was in the Navy for 5 years. That's one thing we have in common, or military service. But I also was a Boy Scout, as was he, and got my Eagle rank as did he. He was an Eagle Scout. I was an Eagle Scout. I admired his integrity. I admired his success as a businessman, his outspokenness. He was direct. That's what I liked about him. I thought he was a straight shooter. And I learned something in researching this show. And at first, there's no way I can verify this. He might have changed later after he retired from business. But at the time, he didn't use a personal computer. Now, remember, personal computers came in the 90s, but apparently he did not have a personal computer. Now, what many executives do is that is something their secretary or executive assistant does. I assume that that's probably what happened later, that when personal computers came in, when individuals in their home had personal computers, maybe later he had his own personal computer. I don't know. But what I was reading and hearing is at least in the 90s, he didn't. Now, many people got their personal computers in the late 90s and in the 2000s when personal computers took off. Now, I have been in, like I said, I've lived in Dallas since 1984 and I still live in Dallas. When I got out of the service, I moved to Fort Worth and was there from the end of 1978 through February of 1984. Then I moved to Dallas, and I'm happy here. I moved to Texas. I selected Texas. I wasn't born in Texas. You can tell I have a native. I have an accent that's really a New Jersey accent, but I was born in New York City. And I'm familiar, at least, I haven't been back in years, but I'm familiar with New York politics. And if you were born in New York City, you're probably a Democrat. Yeah, there are some Republicans. The one person that a Republican that got elected in New York City was John Lindsay, Mayor John Lindsay. And for a brief 3 or 4 months, I worked for the city of New York as an intern. So I know a little bit about New York City politics and how it works. And most working people were Democrats, and Republicans were the rich, the country club set. And the Republican Party for decades has been controlled, as far as I'm concerned, by what at one time was called Rockefeller Republicans. Some call them country club Republicans. Now I would call them Republicans in name only. It's never been a conservative party. It never has been. It's not that conservatives didn't run. Barry Goldwater ran in 1964 and he got clobbered. And the only reason why he ran, he was a good friend of John F. Kennedy, who got elected president in 1960. And they were looking forward to debating each other in various towns. So Barry Goldwater threw his hat in the ring, but what happened? John F. Kennedy got assassinated in November of 1963, and Barry Goldwater did not like at all that Texan, Lyndon Baines Johnson. Didn't trust him, didn't like him, but he stayed in, although I really think he didn't want to run. And I bring that up because if you're going to run for president, what do you really need to if you want to be successful? And this applies to Democrats and Republicans. You need what I call mama. You need money, and you need a lot of money. Now, if you don't have it, you have to raise it. And many of these businessmen have a lot of money. Donald Trump certainly does, so did Ross Perot, but they don't like to spend their money running for public office, and they're tight with their money. And that was the problem with Ross Perot, and to a certain extent with Trump, but he got a lot, he knew the code, the way he broke the code, the way you run, and Trump understood this, is you get free coverage. All the networks, the newspapers, were covering his rallies. So Trump, I think, this is just a suspicion of mine, he really analyzed the Perot candidacy and saw what did Ross Perot do right and what did Ross Perot do wrong. Now, I maintain, you'll have to ask President Trump this, I don't believe at all that Donald Trump thought he was going to get the Republican nomination. And even if he did, he did not think he would win. I think he was surprised as anyone else when he won. And he's made the best of the situation. And a lot of Democrats and some never-Trumpers, and they're really Trump haters, have never figured him out, never taken the time to try to figure out why did he win. You see, I maintain that if Donald Trump, like Perot, ran as a pro-choice candidate. And remember, Perot has had, he's passed away, obviously, a son and five daughters. Pretty sure it's five, four or five. So he was pro-choice. That does not surprise me. Donald Trump, for a long time, was pro-choice, and then he switched. I give that to his credit, but when you do that, you're opening yourself up for the charge of being a flip-flopper. And I think that was Mitt Romney's problem. On many issues, he changed his mind. And people, why they will allow one or two changes, you know, if you get new information, new facts, yeah, you should change your mind if they're persuasive. So Donald Trump ran as pro-life, and he got the evangelical vote. That's one of the reasons he's president today. And like Ross Perot, he was against NAFTA. He was against, and the reason was, as Ross Perot would say, that loud sucking sound is jobs leaving the United States. Well, Ross Perot was right about that. But what's not factored in, yes, Mexico probably net-net, not probably, true, got many, many U.S. factories moved to Mexico. Not hard to understand. Ross Perot understood it. Then it was, you could pay him $1 an hour, $2 max, no health care benefits, and businessmen are profit-oriented. That's why they left the country, not only to Mexico, but to China and other countries. You see, the elites, the very wealthy, the people that own and control this country, they want cheap labor. And as Russ Perot points out, I'm going to play briefly a clip of his so you get a flavor, that health care is a big item in terms of cost of labor. You can't just look at the salary or hourly wage. You have to look at the benefit package. And to compete with other companies in the United States, you better have a very good health plan. And then secondly, once you do have that, people are looking for retirement plans. Because to recruit, retain people, reward people, they look at and compare your benefit package, both really the total compensation package, look at the salary, the hour or hourly wage, whether or not you have a health care coverage, how generous is it, how good is the health care coverage, and then what about the retirement plans? Now, what you need to understand, and I know Ross Perot understands this because most of my clients were business owners. Initially, you start out, it's just you. And that's the same thing with Ross Perot. He had to borrow some money from his wife. And initially, you don't have employees, but if you're successful, land contracts, and grow, you will add more and more people. The people that are entrepreneurs take the risk, and they're taking the risk because they have a desire to build a business. They're what we call entrepreneurs. And it's hard in those first couple of years, even with successes, to build the company. Because there's a lot of things you got to do, and when you're doing them, you're competing. Now, to the extent you're an innovator, you're offering a product that's currently not available. And what I'm talking about is EDS, Electronic Data Services. That was the company he built up, eventually sold to General Motors. And he got a lot of GM stock, but he wanted to make good cars. He was on the board of directors, wanted to make good cars. The chairman then, president, CEO, wanted to make acquisitions, wanted to expand another business. I believe Russ Perot was right. Quality and a better product will keep current customers. When quality goes down, and they were competing with the Japanese then, these were the early days, but the General Motors board didn't want to listen to him, so they bought him out. So he got more money. The mistake they made, they didn't sign a non-compete agreement. And then a couple of years later, he started a firm to compete with EDS. And him and his son built that up. That's what an entrepreneur is about. Taking the risk, seeing an opportunity, building a product that has a lot of demand, and EDS, at least initially, and this is sort of ironic, Medicare is one of the major entitlements. It's right after Social Security, you have Medicare, and then you have Medicaid. Well, there's a lot of processing involved of claims, paperwork, administration, and that needs to be automated. And that was the business that Ross Perot got into. He saw the opportunity. Remember, Medicare was passed in 1965, and it was in the 70s, into the 80s, where Ross Perot expanded his business. But then in 1992, what happened? He decided to run for president because they thought the people were, and the politicians, both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, were not focusing in on certain key problems. I'm talking about every year the government, and it continues to this very day, are spending now hundreds of billions of dollars more in government spending than they collect in taxes from all sources. Not only personal income taxes, corporate taxes, but also so-called payroll taxes for Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, and disability. And if you continue to run these large deficits, in other words, if you year after year run the deficits, what happens is the national debt goes up, up, and up. To pay the bills, you have to issue what's called treasury securities, either bills, notes, or bonds. So when he ran, he focused in on the deficits that the federal government was running. Now, many of you were not even born when Ross Perot was running. He ran in 1992, dropped out, came back, still got just slightly under 19% of the vote. He did not win any electoral college vote. And I maintain, I'm the only one, that had he not dropped out, he might have very well won. But many of his supporters, many Texans, felt betrayed that he got out. Now, he quickly got back about a month later. But what's the problem with that? You lose momentum. Momentum. And he did. And Bill Clinton, the rest is history. Bill Clinton won. George Bush's problem is many Republicans felt betrayed by him. Now, Bush family, or at least I call him Daddy Bush, George H.W. Bush, blamed Perot for being a spoiler. And point of fact that Perot did take votes away not only from Bush, but also from Clinton, and probably more from Clinton. So I don't think that's a valid charge. But what I think the Republicans are not factoring in, and remember, he ran as a Republican, and then ran as a third party candidate, he's been the most successful. See, I think the biggest mistake, and Trump is making the same mistake, what we need is a new political party that will challenge nationally as well as locally. In other words, you need to form a new political party, and it's going to take years to do this, challenge Democrats and Republicans. Because people today are walking away from both parties. That's why the independents typically, in terms of registration, are between 40 and roughly 48% of the voters. They're the largest, not party, but in terms of Democrats, Republicans, and independent, it's independents that are the largest percent. Now, that number does change. In my mind, they're roughly at 45%. But once that number consistently gets over 50%, I think it's only a matter of time before somebody decides to establish a political party, a national political party, with a clear agenda based on clear principles, and to really go after both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Why? They're both big government parties, and the deficits are getting bigger and bigger as is the national debt. So voting Democrat and Republican is voting for the status quo. You're not going to get any much fundamental change at all. They call it voting for the lesser of two evils. I call it voting for evil. They're not dealing with the financial problems faced by the United States. And it is becoming and has been unsustainable. I was just reflecting, if Ross Perot had been a better politician, a better candidate, not that he wasn't a bad candidate, I think the biggest mistake he made was getting out briefly in July. That turns off a lot of people. If you're going to seriously run for the presidency, you got to have money. Ross Perot had money and could raise a lot of money. He needed an organization. That's why you need a party. I think he understood that. You need a message. I think his message was good. It could have been better, but good. His message challenges both Democrats and Republicans. They're not financially responsible. In other words, they're spending too much money, your money. You need a momentum, and that was the biggest problem. He broke momentum. Think about it. You're number one in 1 June in the polls. You're leading both Bill Clinton and George H. Bush. And then in July, he decided to get out, take a rest. I think that's one of the reasons he got called, or they would call him crazy. And he had a theme song. That is crazy. But it points up to the key point here. He's not a politician. He's not a politician. He's a businessman. That's his experience. Yeah, he was an Eagle Scout. He was an officer and a gentleman and started his own company. And he knew a lot of politicians. But he didn't seem to study what you need to study. You need some basic understanding of how politics is played. And yes, The story we heard was that he should have known this. Both the Democrats and Republicans were doing what's called opposition research. They were digging into any scandals, not only of his, but of his family's. And he didn't like it. He didn't like it. Well, if you didn't like it, you shouldn't have run, sir. So I thought Russ Barrow could have been and should have been president. Because if he really led on this issue and insisting on balanced budgets or surpluses and getting the national debt down, I think he would have gotten two terms and would have the financial situation in the United States would be much better. And why Russ Barrow is noted for supporting our veterans, our people in uniforms, as well as people that are out of the military. He wasn't really a big supporter of the first Iraqi war. Neither was I. I was unconvinced that we should go attack Saddam Hussein in Iraq. No, but we did. I don't know his views on Vietnam, but he had a reputation for hiring a lot of former military. I worked for a gentleman that was a hero in Vietnam. He was, I believe, a captain, maybe even a major, and almost worked for Russ Barrow. I never interviewed or applied there. I was more interested in the financial services industry. But a lot of former military would go to work for him. So if you were a hardworking former military, especially officer, you probably could get a job there if you wanted one. And most people that I've talked to do respect him. I wouldn't know. I really didn't have interest in his company other than I was impressed with him and his results. Now, since many of you have not heard Russ Barrow, let me play. He put together these commercials, 30-minute commercials. Now, I'm not going to play. I have a clip. It's 24 minutes. I'm not going to play the entire clip. And really, to do justice for it, you need to view it. And for those that are new listeners, the way you listen to my show is to go to the prankpops.wordpress.com site. That's the companion blog for this show. And at the very top, you get a link. This is show 1286. And under that, though, I give you a lot of information, primarily YouTube videos, articles, charts, cartoons, pertaining to the stories I'm covering. And this is the lead story definitely in Dallas, Texas, in the United States today. The death from leukemia at age 89. He had a birthday in June, just turned 89. And the passing of Russ Barrow. And I knew he retired many years ago, and after he got out of politics, sold his firm, he sort of dropped out of sight, enjoyed his retirement. He was very much a family man, gave a lot of money to various charities. He set up a science museum in Dallas. I've been to it once, but I wanted you to have the opportunity to listen to maybe half. I'll play. The reason I'm not playing the whole thing, a lot of it is numbers that pertain to 1992. Now, I'm going to give you some numbers pertaining right now, but I wanted you to listen to the case he was trying to make.
Balancing the budget and reforming government.
Good evening. Tonight we're going to talk about how to solve the problems that we defined that face our country. I think we can come to the conclusion immediately with this quote. History repeats itself. The budget should be balanced. The treasury should be refilled. Public debt should be reduced. The arrogance of public officials should be controlled. These are not new words. Cicero said these words over 2,000 years ago, but certainly they apply to our country today. Anytime we do anything, we try to learn from experience. We learned a lot from the first program from your comments. First, you wanted better charts that you could see the fine print on, and you'll have those tonight. Secondly, we had one news announcer criticize the pointer that I used before. So, since we're dealing with voodoo economics, a great young lady from Louisiana sent me this voodoo stick, and I will use it as my pointer tonight. And certainly it's appropriate because, as you and I know, we are in deep voodoo. Well, let's get right to work. Let's sort of do a quick summary of what we discussed before in terms of where we are, then we'll go to the solution. We're $4.1 trillion in debt. That's a staggering burden to pass to our children. It's unconscionable. Just this year, we ran up $341 billion in new debt. And as we discussed the other night, that's our legislators and our president trying to buy our vote this year with what used to be our money. We're not that dumb. Now, where does the money come from? comes from all these places, and we get $1.1 trillion coming in the door. The two major sources are individual income tax and Social Security and Medicare. Corporate income tax is the third. The others are fairly small. How much money do we spend? We got $1.1 trillion coming in, but we're spending $1.5 trillion. Most of that goes to Social Security, Medicare, and other entitlements. Next to that is national defense, a little over $300 billion. Next to that is interest on the debt. That's unusually low this year because the interest rates are so low, but don't count on that continuing. Every time the interest rates go up 1%, the 70% of the national debt that's 5 years or less goes up $28 billion. That's the impact. What is the net effect of the way our country's been run? What used to be a dollar in 1950 is now 18 cents. No wonder both parents are working, some of them two jobs, just to make ends meet. Running the value of the dollar down is really hurting the people in our country.
Let me point out, and if you're a regular listener to the show, you know where I'm going. The Federal Reserve, which is the central bank of the United States, is responsible for monetary policy. They began business in 1914. The law was passed when Woodrow Wilson was president in December of 1913, but they started business in 1914. A 1914 dollar today is worth less than 2 cents. I point this out because the primary goal of any central bank is price stability. Not the United States Central Bank. Their goal is 2% or less. Price stability, there is no inflation. You see, I'm not a fan of the central bank, the Federal Reserve of the United States. It has eroded the purchasing value of the dollar. A 1914 dollar to today. Oh, it's still a dollar bill, but it buys, in terms of goods, less than 2 cents of what it could have purchased if the value had remained constant. You see, inflation erodes the value of the dollar, which means the purchasing power, the goods and services that you can buy with it. That's why later this evening I have to make a quick stop at the grocery store, and you can't help but notice the prices have gone up, up, and up. They keep going up, up, and up. They're not going down. Okay, occasionally you have a sale. And it's food prices and oil prices that are very volatile. They don't count them, or the Federal Reserve excludes them because of the volatility. But what do most Americans buy? At least once, if not twice a week, I go to the grocery store. Once, maybe twice a month, they go to the gas station. They buy food for themselves and their family and gasoline to run their cars. And what's happened? The prices of all these goods, including food and oil, gasoline, have gone up, up, and up, as has the size of the federal government.
Now let's look at the net effect on all of us. From 77 to 92, the poorest got poorer, the second poorest fifth. This is 20% of the population, still lost money. The middle fifth, the three-fifths up, still lost money. When you get to the four-fifths, it's break-even. The richest fifth is the only place that went up. Now go to the top 5% and the top 1%. Top 5% improved their incomes by 60%. The top 1% by 138%. Trickle-down economics didn't trickle, and this isn't fair. All right, what about our average hourly wage at a time when we need to have everybody at work and making more money so that we can pay our bills? Just follow it here. It's 60s, 70s, 80s, 90, it's dropping. Shouldn't surprise you. Supply and demand, we've got people out of work. Well, just to show you how fouled up the system is, in the middle of all this, what's happening to our corporate executive salaries compared to those of our industrial competitors who are beating us in head-to-head competition. Here's the ratio between worker compensation and executive compensation in Japan. Here's the ratio in Europe, and here is the ratio in the United States. Trickle-down economics didn't trickle at all, folks. It all stopped right here. That's not good for the companies. That's not good for the stockholders. That's not good for the country, and that leaves us vulnerable. These guys want to make this kind of money. They ought to be TV anchormen, basketball players, rock stars. But running a company, look, these fellows have their heads straight here. They're getting appropriate income, but not rock star income. Let's look at our international competitors. Now, you don't have to like the fact that we live in a tiny world, but I'm telling you, we're stuck with it. Somebody wins, somebody loses. Here we are. Look at how they are growing. Here's our growth. Here's Japan's growth. Here are the newly industrialized Asian countries that at one time you and I thought just raised rice. They're not raising rice anymore, folks. They've got what used to be the high-paying jobs here over there. This chart makes it as clear as I can to you in terms of who is going to own tomorrow. Think of Taiwan, tiny little island. There it is, just in a little piece of Texas. They're going to spend $600 billion on public investment programs. Our great country is going to spend $150 billion, one-fourth that much. We have a population of 248 million. Taiwan has 20 million. In fact, we're over about 12 times their population, and we're spending a fourth as much preparing for the future. All right, let's go from there to Japan. Here is Japan. Japan is about the size of Montana, if you pack it all together. It's much smaller than it appears on the map. Has a population half our size. But Japan is spending $80 billion right now on building for the future, short term. Now let's go to Germany. Keep your eye on Germany. I told you that, you know, they're paying a good price for money. Germany is right here in purple. Germany has 78 million people. But Germany will spend $1 trillion over the next 10 years rebuilding East Germany. We'd better get busy and start rebuilding our great country and not just wandering around saying, well, everything will work out if we don't do anything.
Now, what he's talking about today is called infrastructure. Roads, railroads, airports, ports for ships. Now, you do need these type of investments, but they really should be proposed by local government, not the national government, because they benefit primarily local or state situations. What happens is you can get a misallocation of resources. In other words, you overinvest in infrastructure. That was the case in Japan, and that's the case today in China. And they're trying to influence other countries by loaning other countries money to expand their infrastructure. I went over that in the last show briefly, and I'll come back to it in later shows. Because where you have a centralized situation where the government is planning expenditures like this, and mostly it is government expenditures, you get misallocation of resources, either too much in infrastructure, or in a Chinese example, too much in building cities where their own citizens can't afford to live there. So while you can use investment, especially public investment, to spur the growth of your economy, the danger is you will over-allocate too much resources to infrastructure.
Does that ever happen in your life? Say, maybe the problem will go away in my life. If I ever take that attitude, the problem just grows and grows and grows. If you want to have it go away, you make it go away. Okay, here's the end result of letting our country decay like this. The 18 to 24-year-old men in this country back in 1980, 18% of them made less than $12,000 a year. In 1990, it's up to 40%. With the women, in 1980, 29% made less than $12,000 a year. Today, 48% make less than $12,000 a year. And it is voodoo economics. And maybe now's the time for me to wave the voodoo stick and get rid of the hex. But it'll take a lot more than that. It'll take millions of you showing up on November the 3rd to get rid of this hex. Keep in mind, the value of the dollar is going down. The number of people making less than $12,000 is going up. I don't want to bore you with this statement, but trickle down didn't trickle.
Well, he's nailed it. Trickle down did not trickle. Now, what you need to understand is, and he's not getting into it, when you're young and starting out, yeah, you're, especially in the time frame he's talking about, you're going to have a much, much lower income. However, as you move up in a corporation or start your own business, whatever, if you're successful, what happens? Your income goes up. In other words, why the number of total people did go up, making less than 12,000, they're different people. But he has a valid point. The bottom 50%, really 60% of the population, has not at all benefit anywhere near to the extent that the top 1%, 5%, or 10% have. It didn't trickle down.
It just didn't work. We have 19th century capitalism in this country. Our successful international competitors are practicing modern-day capitalism. We need to practice 21st century capitalism. We need an intelligent, supportive relationship between government and business. We need long-term thinking. We need to target the industries of the future and make sure they are here and the words made in the USA are written across them. We need to have the most rapidly growing small business society in the world because we can create more jobs more quickly there. All of this can be done, but just look at that, and I think you'll conclude the way we're going is the wrong way.
This is exactly what Communist China did. Their plan is by 2025 to be leaders in the new technology industries. Keep that in mind.
Here are the solutions. We're going to start with balancing the budget. We've got to cut general spending by $315 billion, business tax increases of $49 billion, other tax increases of $293 billion, entitlement reform will bring us $268 billion, spending increases to help build our country an additional $109 billion, tax decreases $62 billion. It nets out savings of $754 billion. We've got to balance the budget just like you have to balance your budget. Congressional Budget Office projection out through 98 is here. Our plan takes us down to here. That's a $754 billion deficit reduction. Do we have to do it? Of course we do. We're going to have a 10% cut in discretionary programs. We'll have a 5% cut in specific programs. These discretionary programs include such things as science grants, farm supports, government operations, etc., etc. Down here, we'll have a $22 billion cut in business subsidies, and we will have, over this period of time, $145 billion in interest savings just because we stopped spending so much extra money. Tax decreases, it's not all bad news. We will have a $27 billion decrease in taxes to get an investment tax credit, and that money will be spent to build new factories, buy plant and equipment, and create jobs. That money spent right on the bullseye. Doesn't go in somebody's pocket to buy a yacht. Right over here, we're going to have a decrease here, and it's a tax credit to stimulate research and development. We call it now research and experimentation. You and I used to call it R&D. But this is to target the industries of the future and make sure that we lead and dominate in those industries. We're going to spend $10 billion in tax credits on worker training, to train our people for the jobs of tomorrow. Now then, we've got to get money from institutions, from individuals, from every place there is money, invested in the treasuries of companies. Now hold that thought. Not shooting dice on Wall Street, invested in the treasuries of companies, so that those companies have the money to create jobs. We will create more jobs more quickly by putting money into little companies, startup businesses, small businesses than any other way, but that is high-risk money. The investor may lose it. We've got to give the investor an incentive to put it there as opposed to buying government bonds or putting it in a bank, drawing interest in a savings account that's federally guaranteed. Believe me, this comes back again and again and again and again, and if anybody has any hesitation about it, we'll have a 30-minute program on this one because we're going to put it in the Treasury. The money will be used to build the company, to create jobs, and the tiny little money that goes into that treasury and the tiny little bit of taxes that we don't get will be lost compared to the thousands of people that company may eventually employ, the payroll taxes they'll pay, the income taxes that company will pay. It will be a giant financial pump for our country. Business tax increase. We're going to improve the tax collection from foreign companies. That'll get us $21 billion. We'll reduce the business entertainment deduction. You know, kind of almost charge off anything against your income tax on entertainment now. We'll save $16 billion now. Have increase in user's fee of $12 billion. That'll bring us in $49 billion. Other tax increases. Here's one you don't like. Raise the gasoline tax. That brings us $158 billion, which we'll use to rebuild our country. Every other industrialized country has a much higher tax than we're proposing. It's 10 cents additional per year for 5 years. So it's 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. It just adds up over time to a maximum of 50 cents after 5 years. The other two candidates like to tell you it's a 50-cent tax. No, it goes on 10 cents a year. And I'll tell you more in a minute about why we have to do it. We'll have a tax increase on tobacco. We'll have an increase on income tax rates for the top 4% of the population. And we'll reduce tax exemptions for the rich. For example, we'll put a ceiling of $250,000 on mortgages that you can deduct. It will be no deduction on mortgages on second homes. Let's go back to gasoline for a minute. Here's what our industrial competitors are doing. Italy, collects $3.57 in taxes for every gallon of gasoline. France, $3.12. Japan, $2.25. United Kingdom, $2.09. Germany, $1.99. And the United States collects 35 cents. We have got to collect more taxes in this country, and this is one fair place to get it if we spend all of that money on building for the future and don't squander it on some new pork barrel program in Congress. This money will be dedicated for specific purposes. This is going to require sacrifice by all of us. It will pay huge dividends for us, our children, and our grandchildren. Now, I will be delighted if someone can come up with a better idea. If you don't like this, we've got to have a better idea. But this one right here, this gasoline tax, let's look at what it raises, $158 billion.
I'm going to leave it there. I played about half of the clip. If you want to listen to the remainder, you can. Remember, we're talking about 1992 and previous year's numbers here. And yeah, there are better ideas, one being the fair tax or a broad-based consumption tax, which I advocate. In other words, entirely scrap the current federal tax system and replace it with a single tax that everybody pays. And it's on when you buy a new good or service. When you check out, pay for it, you'll be paying for a tax of 20%. It's a proportional tax. Now, to make the tax fair, everybody would get a tax rebate every month of $1,000. That's to make the tax progressive or graduated. So if you spend, for example, $60,000, it's per person. Let's say an individual pays $60,000. He consumes. He buys shirts, shoes, tires, food, and there are no exemptions. 20% of that $60,000 or $12,000 would go to the federal government. But since we don't want to tax the bottom 50 to 60% that make either they're not working or make low incomes, everybody would get a $1,000 check every month. And what that means is up to $60,000, when you offset the prebate to the tax you pay, you don't pay any taxes up to $60,000. The net effect is $60,000. So there are many, many new ideas. But what's striking is we're in a lot worse shape. Had Ross Perot not gotten out in July and really wanted to be president, and I have my doubts as to if he truly wanted to, we wouldn't be, I think, in this financial disaster that we are now. It's not too late, but we're running out of time. We've just wasted over 25 years. He had the right ideas, but they called him crazy. No, he wasn't crazy. He was pointing out what the Democrat and Republican parties, the mess that both parties have done. Now they don't even think deficits matter. At one time, deficits definitely mattered. So Ross Perot, although he ran twice, first time he was most successful, but got no electoral college votes. Had he ran a better campaign and did not get out for basically July, and I think candidates get better as the campaign goes on, I thought he could have been elected. But what happened when he got out, many people that were big time Perot supporters deserted him. They thought that he was misleading them. They felt betrayed. So even when he got back in, he still got nearly 20% of the vote, not quite, a little below 19. But the damage was done, and it was inflicted by Ross Perot. And I think he heard from many of his friends, many of his supporters, that they were not happy with what he did. And it's a shame that he did it. I think he did it because he didn't want to be president. I could be wrong. That's just my opinion. You see, if you want to be president, yes, you have to have money. You have to have organization. I think he had both. You have to have the right message. The message was very good. You had to have momentum, but he destroyed his momentum when he got out. But the key requirement that's many times overlooked, you have to have ambition. You have to have fire in the belly. You want to be president. Now, some people just want to be president to say they're president. Oh, many of the politicians, that's the situation. Others want to accomplish something. Ross Perot wanted to accomplish something. But his entry into politics, unfortunately, I think set back this country. He had the right issue then. Issues do change. He debated Al Gore on NAFTA and didn't come prepared for the debate. Ross Perot's not a debater. Al Gore was. And Al Gore won the debate. And then Ross Perot was done. You see, if you're going to run for any office, you better be prepared. You better know your opposition, and you better know the arguments. Not only the arguments for your case, but for their case, to answer your opposing party. And as a result, we got NAFTA. NAFTA was passed. Now, I'm for free and fair trade, and as a result of NAFTA, yeah, we've been running deficits with Mexico, but we had a lot more jobs created not only in Mexico, but in the United States. Net-net, it benefited the United States, but some terms and conditions should have been changed, and that's what Donald Trump has done. Ross Perot did not come prepared for that debate. And it showed. And there's a clip. You can listen to Larry King. Larry King was the person that Ross Perot liked to appear and be interviewed by. And he explains exactly what happened. And you can listen to the debate if you want to. And it was a shame that Ross Perot really got beaten up. And I think at that point lost his credibility. And he got less than 10% the second time. And he was running, yes, as a third party. The three big mistakes, I think, were not forming a party from the very beginning and getting it well-financed, and focusing on challenging both Democrats and Republicans. I think he had the right message, but if you're going to challenge free trade agreement that was being debated then, you need to do your homework on it. He opposed it, and he's famous for what you're going to hear when NAFTA is passed is a sucking sound of jobs leaving the United States. That's exactly what happened. He was right as to what was happening, especially in the short run. But you got to be able to argue your case and refute the opposition. What's surprising is, as a Boy Scout, as an Eagle Scout, the motto of Boy Scouts is be prepared. And Ross Perot did not come to that debate prepared, and he lost. He had his head handed to him. And as a result, he never ran again. No surprise there. I think this is a case, had he not dropped out in 1992, he would have been president, and when he re-ran and had the incumbency advantage, he would have had a second term. And we would not have had Bill Clinton for two terms, and we certainly wouldn't have had George Bush. In other words, it was up to Ross Perot could have won, but he lost it. And he lost a lot of goodwill. Now, after saying all this, he is an American legend. He is respected by many people, including me, for his many achievements, not only in business, but in his charitable gifts to many organizations, and is also his support of the armed forces and the veterans. So I salute Ross Perot. My sympathy goes out to his family. Condolences. And he was, and I think still will be, an American legend based on his many, many achievements in many areas. Now, I thought it was fitting that a story that is breaking right now, every month the United States Treasury puts out what they call the MTS, the monthly Treasury statement. They're supposed to produce that statement 8 days, 8 business days into the month. That would be tomorrow, Wednesday. But the May data should be coming, the June data should be coming out tomorrow. Now, I've noticed this. The available information right now is April. Tomorrow we'll get May. They're falling behind. Now, yes, they reformatted the report and all that. Now, I'm mentioning MTS. You can Google it, and you should. They used to have a format that you could use to put the information on the web. Now they don't. They have an Excel spreadsheet, and they have a PDF. That was the biggest mistake they've made. Why did they do it? To hide the deficit. The Democrats did it, and so have the Republicans. At one time, it had a web format, an HTML format. Not anymore. And I used to copy and paste the HTML format into a web page. Can't really do that. Yeah, you can copy the PDF, but you can't get the results of the PDF unless you want to print it out. I have a link to it. Now, why am I going on about this? The deficit, I suspect, through May will be a deficit of probably about $600 billion. We still have June, July, August, September. In other words, two-thirds through the fiscal year, we have a deficit approaching around $600 billion. It looks like the deficit for the entire fiscal year that ends September 30th of this year will be at least $900 billion, could be as high as $1,000. That's more than three times what it was when Perot was making his presentations, between two and three times. It hasn't gotten any better under Democrats or Republicans. And it's going right back up to over $1,000 billion or $1 trillion. We've learned nothing. or we learn the wrong lesson, that deficits don't matter. Oh, yes, they do matter, because there will be a day of reckoning. Now, many of these politicians, Democrat and Republican, will be retired by then. But in the next 10 years, 15 at most, it's going to hit the fan. We're going to be in deep, deep, deep doo-doo. In other words, the national debt will be over $30 trillion. And what they never mention is that's the tip of the iceberg. What they never talk about is so-called unfunded obligations or unfunded liability. What do you think are the unfunded liabilities or obligations? No surprise here, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and pensions. The pensions for government employees and the military. That's 10 times the national debt, actually higher than that. You know, one of the criticisms that Ross Perot made of General Motors is they weren't funding their pension plan for the workers. Oh, yeah, they were funding the pension plan for the executives, but they were underfunding the pension plans for the workers, as well as their medical benefits. Now, some people would say, well, this doesn't matter. Oh, yes, it does. These are promises that the government has made to you and me, and millions, tens of millions of Americans are counting on getting their Social Security and their Medicare benefit. I'm telling you, within 10 years, we'll be lucky if we can pay 80% of our Social Security and Medicare benefits. They have to be cut. Are there alternatives? Yes. Dramatically increase taxes. Politicians don't want to do that. Or means test it. So if you do the right thing and save your retirement, as a result, you have a lot more than someone just getting their Social Security check. They will cut your benefits, whether it's Social Security or Medicare accordingly. This is unsustainable. And for many of you Trump supporters that probably will say, well, Trump will figure it out. No, Trump has figured it out and is ignoring it. Entitlement programs, primarily Social Security and Medicare, are off the table. He doesn't want to negotiate on that. That doesn't make the problem go away. You're not addressing the problem. That's one of the Achilles heels. But is the Democratic Party going to bring that up? No, they want to increase more entitlements. Pay for college education for everybody. Pay off the debt. We have a political elitist establishment that are totally, completely irresponsible. Government spending is out of control, and they want to make it several orders of magnitude worse. This is insanity. If you think Ross Perot was crazy, I don't. I think he understood it very, very well. The inmates are running the asylum, and the inmates are the Democratic and Republican politicians that can't balance a budget to save their lives and are ignoring the problem and not telling the American people the truth. They're lying to you. They won't go near this with a 10-foot pole. They're cowards. They're bought and paid politicians. They don't think long term. They think, I need to raise money to stay in office. If you keep voting Democrat and Republican, you're going to get the exact same results. Deficit after deficit after deficit, higher and higher the national debt as the unfunded liabilities or obligations go sky high. $230 trillion, $240 trillion, $250 trillion. That's what we're talking about, where a trillion is a 1,000 billion. That's how bad it is. To put it in context, the real GDP of the United States is about $20 trillion or $20,000 billion. In other words, our obligations, unfunded obligations, are more than 10 times the total real GDP of the United States of America. We're never going to pay it off. We haven't adequately funded these benefits. It's going to crash, folks. They're going to run out of money to pay off these benefits. And then they're either going to have to, what they're going to do is they're going to cut the benefits, raise the taxes, and mean test it. Those are the three things they're going to do. What they should have been doing, what Ross Perot was emphasizing, is balance the budget not 1 year in 20, but for every year. In other words, not have deficits. Either balance the budget or have surpluses. This year, the deficit will be over $900 billion. It could be as high as $1,000 billion. They usually try to keep it that just under that. That isn't progress. That's just making it worse. Because neither political party, neither the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, will permanently close federal departments, do away with all subsidies, balance the budget, and fundamentally reform the way we collect taxes, do away with all federal taxes, replace it by a single tax, a broad-based consumption tax. Is the Democratic Party proposing that? No, they're just proposing more and more entitlement programs. We're broke. We're broke. It's unsustainable. We're broke. It crashes. The doo-doo is going to hit the fan. It doesn't matter if you vote Democrat or Republican. You get the same result. Government spending is out of control. I call it spending addiction disorder. That's what they have. They laughed at Ross Perot and his charts. He was telling the truth to the American people. He was a person of integrity, and he could have been president, but apparently he didn't want to be president. Is Trump going to save us? No. He's not addressing spending at all. Like I said, by the time, if I believe Trump is going to get a second term, by the time he leaves, the national debt will be over $30 trillion. That's $30,000 billion. He's not closing any federal department. He's not fundamentally reforming the tax code by scrapping it and going to a broad-based consumption tax. And he wants more and more government spending. The difference between the Democrats and the Republicans is what the more and more spending is. For Trump and the Republicans, it's more military spending and more infrastructure. For the Democrats, it's more entitlement programs. We'll pay for your education. That's nice, but what about the people that pay the taxes and they don't get an education because they don't want one? It's Santa Claus socialism. Vote for me and I'll give you some free stuff. What do you want? You want a free college education? Okay, you have it. What they don't tell, you'll be paying for it for 50 years. There's no such thing as a free lunch or a free education or free medical care. If you want it, you go out and work for it, not with a handout begging politicians. That's what they want. They want you to be dependent on them. And that's the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. They're two big government parties, and there's very little difference between the two. They want you to be dependent on them. And oh yes, they want campaign contributions from the people that own and run this country. And big lie media is in cahoots with who? The Democratic Party. They're the progressive propaganda machine spouting the Democratic Party agenda and promoting the Democratic candidate. Yes, I believe if Ross Perot had listened to some of his political advisors and did not get out, there was a good chance that he would have been elected president, not Bill Clinton, and certainly not George Bush. And if he did, we certainly would not be in the financial situation we are today. It's beyond a mess. It's beyond voodoo economics or doo-doo. Ultimately, the United States financially will fail. Don't worry, the Federal Reserve will increase inflation. And who does that benefit? It benefits the debtors. Who are the debtors? Who is the biggest debtor today? It's the United States government. The debt keeps getting bigger and bigger. How do they benefit? Through inflation? The dollars that are paid back are worth less, less, and less. So don't be surprised if the purchasing power of your dollar goes down, down, and down. And that's what will happen if we don't address our unsustainable budget deficit situation that is leading to a rising national debt and a rapidly rising unfunded liabilities and obligations for Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With a voice of Richland College.
You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. And KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.